How is Congress getting along these days? Well, as a matter of fact, there's a new way to sort of decide or to figure it out on a more objective way, and it's an actual index, the new bipartisan index, ranking of members of Congress, and that will show the degree of legislative bipartisanship. We're going to talk about that with our guest, the former senator from Indiana, Richard Lugar, who served for many years. He tweets at the Lugar Center. Senator Lugar, welcome back. Thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you so much, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Boy, I could ask you about a bunch of things, but I want to talk about this bipartisan index first of all. All right, who's doing a good job? Who's working together?
Well, we've ranked all the members of the House and Senate in the last Congress. As a matter of fact, we've taken a look at 10 Congresses, but published the last one as an example of people who create legislation to begin with, that is, have good ideas that they put forward and seek others on the other side of the aisle to support that, and people on the other side of the aisle who look for good ideas and are prepared, really, to move ahead. And this, we believe, is important to the American people because they really believe members of Congress are elected to think of new ways of doing better in jobs and domestic politics and foreign policy and what have you. And they really want to see action as opposed to the shutdown of government or the very difficult stresses we've been observing in the last two Congresses in particular.
And the tops in this list, according to the list of the 113th Congress, the most recent one that was completed, the two senators with the highest index scores are Susan Collins of Maine, a Republican, and Joe Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia, both of whom, I should add, get a lot of criticism from within their own party for reaching across the aisle.
Well, perhaps. Looking down further, we have Joe Donnelly of Indiana and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and these are a variety of senators' outlooks. I think that there may be, in primary elections, a certain criticism of people for, in fact, thinking about looking at the other side of the aisle. But the bulk of the American public still wants to see progress, and it really wants to see people who are encouraging others to think and doing so by either co-sponsoring the legislation or offering good ideas and seeking support.
On the House side, by the way, the two on the top of the list, Christopher Gibson, Republican from New York, and Peter King, Republican from New York, also the top scores in the House. I wonder, and you have worked under both Republican and Democratic presidents. As a Republican, you were in the Senate. And I wonder, does it make a difference which party is in power, the level to which you can be bipartisan?
Yes, to some extent, and therefore we've in our tabulations recognized that things are different for people sometimes in the minority party and sometimes in the majority party, quite apart from whoever is president. And so the rankings really have taken consideration the problems that they have in that status. But I would just say simply that in every administration there has to be a president who reaches out to Congress. If he doesn't do so successfully, then things become even more stalemated. And at the same time, congressional leadership can be tremendously important. That is, the leaders of Congress, backed by bipartisan majorities, can influence the White House to do policies that are best for America.
Speaking of which, Senator Richard Lugar, you've worked under different leaders from both parties. Give us an example of people that you think were able to make things happen when you were in the Senate. Who were the kinds of people who could get other senators sitting down at a table and trying to figure out how to make deals or get legislation passed? Who was really good at that?
Well, I was both chairman and ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for quite a period of time. And in those roles, I worked with Joe Biden, who is now vice president, who was chairman from time to time or ranking member, and John Kerry, who's now Secretary of State, for example. Now, I took the position, and they agreed, that when America looks at the rest of the world and they look at us, it's not good to have a 9-8 vote on significant policy problems with foreign nations. We really want to have a unanimous vote or something close to that. We really have to work for that, and regardless of where we came from in terms of our statewide politics. I found, at least on the Foreign Relations Committee, men such as I've cited, Claiborne Pell even before that as the chairman or ranking member of the committee, And now, of course, Bob Corker, who has come out as chairman, I think is doing a great job in reaching across the aisle. And he's found in Ben Cardin of Maryland, for example, a Democrat who has been working with him. So we're seeing an example of really the best of Congress working on foreign policy issues, which are terribly difficult, but very important for the security of our country.
Do you think that foreign relations or foreign affairs and intelligence committees are a little different in that they sort of engender that feeling among the membership that we need to do something together because we're talking specifically about the relationship between this country and enemies or allies abroad?
That could be, and likewise, you can make the same case perhaps for the Armed Services Committee in terms of security. But this doesn't change the fact that in, say, in the Agriculture Committee, I had a chance to serve as chairman of that, and we formulated the so-called Freedom to Farm Bill, which repealed problems that were dated back to the New Deal, which curtailed farmers' ability to manage their own land, to plant as much corn or soybeans or wheat as they wanted to plant or what have you. This took a great deal of bipartisan work across the aisle and two houses. As a matter of fact, Pat Roberts, who's still in the Senate, was very active in the House of Representatives in leadership on this situation. So in domestic issues likewise, even those that have a big historical bias, the bipartisan aspect is very important.
Senator Richard Lugar with us, former U.S. Senator and also the president of the Lugar Center, who has introduced the index, the bipartisan index from the Bipartisan Policy Center, or rather from the Lugar Center, also has written recently about the lost art of bipartisanship in roll call. To that point, I wanted to ask you that there's a sense that maybe people look at it wrong and they think you're at point A, I'm at point C, and we have to meet at point B. But more often than not, legislation that passes in the House and the Senate is the result of a transactional relationship. That is, you get something you want, I get something I want. Not everything, but it may be that they're unrelated. In other words, I may vote your way on this particular bill, but you've got to come my way on another piece of legislation. Can you explain how that works for people who aren't really that familiar with the kinds of workings inside the Senate and the House?
Yes, I can. In fact, the debate in the last 48 hours or so on the trade bill with regard to the Pacific illustrates the fact that down on the floor, Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, was working ardently with Democrats who really want to vote on the Export-Import Bank. The deal that they cut was that they would not include the Export-Import Bank in the trade bill, which is what some folks wanted, but there would be a guarantee of a vote on the Export-Import Bank, which a good number of people in both parties, for example, have some reticence about. This is very clear during the 45 minutes of that roll call vote, which has been extended about a half hour more than is usual.
So that's an example of how they can work to get something done, even though they're still not of one mind on a particular issue.
Yes, and very clearly there were many Democrat and Republican senators who were not of one mind at all. It took a great deal of effort to get the 62 votes to guarantee there's going to be a trade bill. That wasn't there at the beginning of that roll call vote.
I have one last question, if you don't mind. I want to divert a little bit because this weekend, Senator, this channel is going to be devoting an entire weekend to looking back at Vietnam, 40th anniversary of its end, covering the war. There is a museum exhibit. And I know that you had contributed to a book called Inconvenient Stories, Vietnam War Veterans, about 10 years ago, I guess, was a part of it. And I just wonder, you know, given your experience and the fact that you remember it very well, what your recollections, what your reflections on it are, especially as we look back on it 40 years after it ended?
Well, very clearly after the French lost control of portions of that part of the world, things began to be chaotic, and the United States really had to make a determination as to how vigorously we were to participate in that Asian sphere, not only with regard to Vietnam, but with regard to other potential players, the Chinese, the Japanese, and others who were out there. It was the determination of our government that we would, in fact, enter into that situation, and it was a very costly endeavor. At the same time, the outcome in Vietnam ultimately has been nation states that are progressing. I would not overstate the degree of democracy, human rights, trade, and what have you they have, but they've made some headway. And this is, in fact, a more promising area than what we're looking at, I fear, in Iraq and the Middle East, where we intervened at a different time. But still, very tough decisions, very costly for our country. But at the same time, our presence, as we've rekindled our interest in Asia and in Vietnam in particular, has been productive, I think, in the overall.
Senator, I appreciate you spending time with us this morning. Thank you once again for being on POTUS.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Senator Richard Lugar, former United States Senator from Indiana, long career, distinguished career, and now has the Lugar Center to point to, and what we just discussed, something they have introduced this week, the bipartisan index, the ranking of members of Congress and their legislative bipartisanship based on the 113th and the 112th. They're going to do some more, and of course, they'll do the 114th, which we are in the midst of right now. You can check it out. We'll link it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/POTUSPolitics. If you want to go there and check it out, you can also go to the Lugar Center or tweet at the Lugar Center, L-U-G-A-R Center.